What's going on, everybody? This is Patriot Underground here. Now, before we start the show tonight, I just want to say a quick word on behalf of my partners over at PatriotUndergroundGold.com and PatriotUndergroundSilver.com. I don't think I have to remind everybody the amazing movement that we've seen with gold and silver prices over these past couple of weeks. And as I've been telling people all along, as the de-dollarization process accelerates, we are going to see gold and silver prices absolutely skyrocket. You're going to hear an interview tonight. Jim Willie has some pretty amazing predictions for precious metals. I hope you guys really enjoy it. But folks, now is the time. You still have the opportunity to capitalize on the transition into the new system, while at the same time having that peace of mind of knowing that all of your hard-earned wealth that you've worked your entire life for is going to be safe and secure while this transition occurs. And certainly, regardless of what you believe, whatever your projections are about the future, we can look to the past historically, and we know for a fact that gold and silver have always been a store of wealth during uncertain economic times. And let's face it, folks, that's exactly where we're at right now. So click the link in the description, PatriotUndergroundGold.com or PatriotUndergroundSilver.com. Wait until you hear what Jim Willie has to say about gold and silver. This is the time to make that move, folks. I'm telling you, I would not steer you wrong. I'm not a financial advisor, but guess what? Jim Willie is, and there are many, many others out there who have been ringing this bell for a long time. It's time to make the move, folks. Get off the fence. Do the right thing. Click that link in the description. All right, everybody. God bless and Godspeed. Thank you for listening. Patriot out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Underground. Today is April 19th, 2024. Thank you so much for joining me, folks, to discover the truth beneath the surface. As always, I really do appreciate everybody out there taking the time to listen. And as you can see, I have with me tonight the great Dr. Jim Willie. He is a world-famous economic analyst. He's the editor of the excellent website golden-jackass.com. He is an expert in financial forecasting. He provides top-notch commentary, and he's just in general an amazing guy. We've developed quite a rapport over the past few years working together, so it's always a pleasure to have Dr. Jim Willie back on the show. So it's great to see you, my man. How are you?
I'm doing very strange. Thank you. Very strange. I am in the last three or four days. I don't exaggerate stuff. I like to just say what I think and express what I feel. In the last several days, I've been feeling like I'm in a surreal space. Surreal. Mm. And it's somewhat a nightmare from the fascist shit show, the fascist demo shit show, but it's now looking to me like this conflict with Persia and the Red Sea and the Suez Canal and Israel and Gaza. It's almost looking choreographed in order to capture attention, in order to facilitate war funding, and to maybe acclimate the people toward a potentially wider war if it gets out of control. And I do not know if we're going to get out of control, but I've been saying a long time that a lid is on this for getting much, much worse and going global and turning into a conflagration, which is a general term for meeting more retaliatory strikes and retaliatory strikes of a nuclear nature. And I do believe that several years ago, we had some experimental micro nukes exploded in Ukraine. I believe the US and NATO side did them. They were micro nukes. And this is really quite interesting. I won't go on long, but I just want to make an interesting point that if you have a very big explosion, it's pretty hard to argue that it's a conventional type of detonation. And I remember reading an article that was fascinating. It must have been about 2018 or so, maybe 17. I think they were doing experimental micro nukes, and they actually proved that they were micro nukes by the level of whiteness in the white for the explosion. Nuclear is the whitest of the white. I know that sounds a little strange to people who aren't too familiar with color recognition. But, you know, just think of, you got several shades of gray working toward black. Well, black, you could say, has some shades in itself, and so does white. And they have measurements for the white that machines do the detection for. And what they concluded was, way back 7 years ago or so, they had micronukes in Ukraine from the level of whiteness. It's fascinating to examine some of the technological features, but, you know, I think we're being lied to. Now, we made a point before we began recording. I made a simple question. When was the last time we got a true story from the Western mainstream news about Ukraine and the status there, whether it was pushing back the Russians or casualties for the Russians or casualties for the Ukrainians, or the type of conscription, meaning who are they drafting for the Ukraine army, or damage to Ukrainian bunkers and headquarters centers for the NATO. I believe we've been lied to well over 90% of the time regarding Ukraine. And, you know, this is not unique, because we're lied to about the U.S. economy. And, you know, I got to tell you, Patrick, this is my 20th anniversary month. I now have 240 months. It was April of 04 that I began this at the age of 52. And now here, 20 years later, I'm having trouble adding 52 and 20, but maybe you can help me with that later.
45. Anyway,
now I'm 62. I think it's 60. Anyway, I'm collecting Social Security, but I'm spry. I'm alert. I got a lot of energy, and I won't even tell you what I did this afternoon just to make sure I didn't take a taxi. Okay, we're being lied to. In the first year, in the first several months in 04, I cut my teeth on talking about how the government officials and the mainstream news were lying about economic statistics. And the three biggies are price inflation, jobless rate, and the gross domestic product economic growth. I pointed to shadow government statistics and the pre-Clinton CPI, which was at that time about 5% higher than what was reported in the mainstream news, which meant that the economic growth was 5% lower. And we were stuck in a recession for many years in the early years of this newsletter. Okay, I learned very quickly. I mean, honestly, you got to go back. I was in high school during the Vietnam War. When I graduated from high school, I was 1 year away from the draft. I graduated at age 17. So I was 1 year away from the draft. So I followed what was going on when I was a, you know, junior and a senior in high school, because I didn't want to enter a meat grinder. And I learned how many lies we were told about Vietnam. You weren't even born then. And I was learning that MSM News was full of lies. And I won't get into the lies, but some of the biggest ones were, we're trying to fight communism, trying to curb their growth. We don't want to, you know, and there were some items in there that were so blatant that there wasn't even a lie. They weren't permitted to blow up Sam City, the surface-to-air missiles, SAM. There was a place in North Vietnam, we could not bomb them, so that we could sustain and have a good long, 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 long war. Okay, I actually met a guy during a summer vacation sitting on the side at Lake Chautauqua in central New York, and the neighbor had a son, and he was 24, and he just got back from a Vietnam tour, and we talked for 3 hours. Okay, I learned a lot about the lies. So by the time I got to graduate school, you know, in the late 20s, mid 20s, I was well acclimated to the lies. And then we were lied to about, why are we outsourcing our industry? It was so that we could wreck the U.S. economy. This is so simple. They told the public that it was for lower cost of labor, lower regulations for pollution, and just general good solid production on the Pacific Rim. Well, no, it was to eliminate the legitimate income for the US economy. And we got Black Monday in October of 87 as a consequence of that. And it was a little earlier than what I expected. In 84, I said, we got about 4 or 5 years, and we're going to have a crash, something with debt. Okay. You go on to that from that, and fast forward, and you get irrational exuberance in the mid 90s from Alan, Sir Alan, Knight of England, working for the Crown. He never worked for the United States, he worked for the Crown. Okay, move on forward to 9/11, which is just an enormous pack of lies. And from there, you go on to the Lehman Brothers incident, which is another pack of lies. And the trigger for that, by the way, was Chinese sold Fannie Mae bonds. They triggered that. Okay, move on from there to ZIRP, zero interest rate. Why do we do that? Well, to lower our borrowing costs so we could have really Ponzi-like growth in our debt. And go on, move on forward. Why do we have quantitative easing? Well, we don't want to call it hypermonetary inflation, from unsterilized monetization of our debt. So let's call it QE, quantitative easing, and let's do a little Keynesian holy water on that. And from there, we went to Ukraine. We went to the fake pandemic. We went to the war that got provoked. Okay, I'm giving you a 50-year quick synopsis of lies by mainstream news. So when they said that not a single hit in Israel was caused by the Iranian airstrikes last week, I say, well, it's probably bullshit. We'll get the real story soon enough. And what I heard was that the Nevatim Air Force Base in the third round was very severely damaged by hypersonic missiles. Did the mainstream news even mention hypersonic missiles? I don't think so. Okay, what I learned is that there were three rounds for the assault. I call Persia, it's Iran, same thing. My clients tell me, call Persia, Jim. Come on, it's the name that they've had for 5,000 years, so don't go with Iran. Anyway, it's the same thing. The first round were the slow-moving drones. And they move like 100 miles an hour, or maybe less, or maybe a little bit more, and they're not hard to knock down. Okay, so some of the air defense arsenal was used up. I won't say exhausted, but used up. And then the second round, they had the slower missiles, and we just checked this. The cruise missiles are 500 miles an hour. That's pretty darn fast, but they're subsonic. And in that second round, more of the air defenses were knocked, what do you call it? More of the air defenses were successful, like they were with the drones in round one, but they used up and somewhat depleted the Israeli air defense. And they were not ready for round three, and it caused severe damage at the Nevatim Air Force Base, where there were some independent reports of 44 Air Force officers were killed. And that Nevatim Air Force Base was noted as being the headquarters for doing some of the planning, like on the Syrian embassy for Iran, the Persians. So they targeted the Nevatim and they hit it. And apparently, we'll probably never know unless we get some reports from, I hate to say this, from non-Western sources. Our Western press told us that the election was fair and that none of the mail-in ballots were improper. Okay, we have what I do, and this is really simple. I take the mainstream news, I completely turn it around, and that's what I start with. And maybe it's a little bit deviated from that, maybe not much. But when I see Alberta firemen uniforms from Canada in Ukraine, I know they're lying about the photos. And when I see dead Ukrainians or huddled masses of Ukrainians, and it's the same exact picture used in Syria 3 years before, I know they're lying to us about Ukraine. So I expect that they're lying to us about Gaza, and they're lying to us about civilian deaths in Gaza. Okay, we're lied to by our own press. Okay, now let's move on to the retaliatory strike by the Israelis in Persia.
Okay.
I have a Persian client. I've known him for a good 8 or 9 years. He's been a client a long time, and he's a very bright guy. And what I found his strengths to be is international information and implications, geopolitical analysis, and some of the major factors at work.
Okay.
And he said, Jim, I'm Persian. I've got cousins. I've got friends in Persia. And not a single missile struck the land of Persia. Not a single one. And I wrote back and said, yeah, there's a lot of talk about explosions. And he said, yeah, those are midair.
So no actual.
We're lied to about mostly everything. What's that?
I said, so no actual damage on the ground, just overhead aerial explosions to simulate it.
That's what I'm hearing. And apparently the air defenses were very good. And I do not know if any of the air defenses knocked down a supersonic missile. I don't know whether Israel launched any supersonic missile. Okay. That is a different level of warfare. And I believe that what took out, I'm not certain about this, but I believe what took out the Nevatim Air Force Base in Israel was Persian supersonics. Okay, there's different levels of supersonic. The Russians have like, okay, Mach 1 means the speed of sound. That's about 730 miles an hour, something like that. If that's not it exactly, it's very close. The airlines, commercial airlines, are always under 700 miles an hour. They don't want to get anywhere near sonic boom territory. But the Russians have supersonic that's like Mach 5. And there's no defense. And that's what they're threatening in the NATO nations if they launch F-35s or F-17s to do strikes in Russia, that's going to be legitimate target territory. Okay, back to this point. My Persian client, and I'm looking for a different Persian client to confirm things. I don't have like 10 or 12 of them. They're hard to come by. I have two, and I feel quite fortunate in having two because one of them has family and friends. He said, Jim, I speak your language. I call them up every week or two. I call up friends, find out what's going on. Okay. This is
interesting.
Very standard stuff. And, you know, he was very emphatic. He said, not a single one hit the ground in Persia in the last
few
days.
Amazing.
But, you know, some might. We don't know. We don't have a visual of this. We don't see. Okay, by the way, when a cruise missile comes in, you don't see it. When was the last time you saw a 500 mile an hour movement? Okay, we can see an aircraft, a commercial aircraft going 520 because it's way up there. But when it's coming, when a missile is coming down, they're not very big and they move really fast. So you don't really see it. What you get is a streak. Okay. There's going to be a lot more to this, and I'm hoping that we don't get action, counterattack, another attack, counterattack, because this is what the US, UK, NATO axis, I call it the fascist axis, and you know, people better wake up to the music here, because our United States nation has been taken over by a group that is installing fascism and calling it democracy. Their version of democracy fits every definition of fascism.
Yep.
We got censorship, we got fraud, we got usage of the courts to attack and isolate and what's the word? Hamstring political opponents, just like Nicaragua.
Absolutely.
Really embarrassing for the United States. We're considered a bit of a joke now to the entire global community. Now, I don't know where you want to go with this, but we got to mention something regarding the Red Sea.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead. This was the first topic that I wanted to get into, and you already covered most of my questions. So yeah, talk about the Red Sea.
I made a call back in February. I said that obstruction of the Red Sea is going to bring about a U.S. government debt default and a depression in the United States. And what we're seeing is any nation that's part of the U.S., U.K., NATO axis, and that includes, Western Europe, they're getting their ships blocked. And some are bold enough to test the Houthis. And some people who don't know jack shit think that the Houthis are a bunch of ragheads who are operating with 18th century warfare with blunderbusses and other nonsense,
No.
when they've got some really decent arsenals of Persian weapons.
That's right.
And notice that 2 years ago, we started seeing a lot of drones that Russia purchased from the Persians. And the Persians have rather sophisticated drones. They have what they call tank killers. They fly around, gather intel, isolate the tanks, and then take them out. And they got like, three, four, six missiles per drone, the big ones. The Russians have been, in a sense, doing alpha testing, not beta. Beta is where, you have a very isolated group and you keep it all quiet and private. Now, this is alpha testing, open warfare. And what I'm reading, what I learned, not from any Western source, because it's 90% bullshit and opposite, is that the drone technology from Persia is pretty good. I don't know that it is equal to the United States drone warfare, but it might be close. But it's certainly effective enough to take out tanks in 30 days. Now, I have a joke regarding the Germans. The Germans are upset that they don't have enough natural gas supplied by Russia in order to make weapons and trucks and tanks and half-tracks. The Germans don't have enough natural gas to make these weapons that they could send to Ukraine and the Russians would knock out in 30 days. Okay, this is how stupid the war has gotten. And the Germans have arrived at a conclusion that they don't want to play the game anymore of sending Leopard tanks to get knocked out in 30 days
That's right.
from drones. Okay, we're in asymmetric warfare. A drone is not a really big expense. But if it can knock out six or eight tanks, you've got a big multiple of the payoff for a rather moderate cost. And the ragtag Houthis have, I featured this in the January report, I believe. There was an underwater drone recon device. It did not send out, launch a torpedo. It went underwater to gather intel on ships in the Red Sea.
Wow.
And then it probably, heads back home and relays the data. And before you know it, you get a drone attack and they know exactly where the targets are. Okay, this is Persian technology and this is not primitive.
No, very sophisticated.
What you've got is maybe a bunch of uneducated Houthis who are being trained quickly to use drones and knock out ships again in the asymmetric warfare. And I think they've earned the respect of the British shipping morons who insist on sending a ship through. And from what I understand, about five have been sunk.
So you foresee a potential scenario where we could have an obstruction in the Red Sea that would be so significant that it would have the domino effect of collapsing, causing some sort of a collapse. Did I hear that correctly when you were setting
Yeah,
that up?
but not an obstruction where the ships can't get through. The Red Sea is rather big.
Right.
Suez Canal is obviously a bottleneck. They're not permitted to get anywhere near the Suez Canal. And I find it
So not a
extremely
physical obstruction.
not a physical. It's like we can't get through the Red Sea, so let's not bother. We
Gotcha.
can't 50 miles from the Suez Canal, so let's not bother. There's another irony here. They wanted to, let's just say, make a clear path through Gaza for the Ben-Gurion Canal.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that plan, they can't use the Suez Canal. But the Ben-Gurion is not even there. The Ben-Gurion Canal probably, if they began today, would not be completed at the year 2030.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted plans for the Ben-Gurion and lost the Suez. And they figured that they would do a lot of financial damage to Egypt. And they did. But Egypt is going to get probably some form of aid to get them through. Oh my gosh, this is really messy.
Yeah.
The Suez factor, remember it was 3 years ago that a ship from the same company that hit Baltimore got grounded in the Suez and was loaded with kids. And none of them survived, or very few of them survived from dehydration. This is a wicked, wicked concept, and I'd rather not get into that. I believe the Suez factor will contribute toward a decline in Western shipping and therefore in some of the trade payments and work toward a much bigger momentum in non-dollar trade payment.
I see.
Okay, I got to tell you something that's a good summary. I've had a lot of comments in the last 5 years from frustrated clients and a little bit, how should I say it? Angry clients and frustrated colleagues. When on earth are we going to see 2,000 gold and movement up, up, up? And I said, when it becomes rather clear or with very high suspicion or a lot of attention that we have a government debt default in the United States. Now, notice that we're above 2000 and no one's talking about a pullback to 2000 anymore. They're talking about a pullback maybe to 2250 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are now in debt default debate territory. Debt default debate. And I'm going to tell you something that I truly believe, Patrick. I've said this before. When the Treasury repo window blew up in late 2019, I think that was the first volley, the first chapter of the U.S. government debt default.
Okay. And this, yeah, we've talked about that. I remember that.
This is not simple. We may see the debt default as a 5 to 7 year process because there's that much dollar and treasury ownership out there. Central banks own $7 trillion in treasuries. And the narcos own trillions in dollars. Okay, I tell you, this is.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit because I wanted to. You brought up a couple of things that I wouldn't mind actually picking your brain about, but let's get into gold and silver and what's going on with BRICS and de-dollarization because this is actually, you must be reading my mind. This is the second topic that I wanted to get into tonight. And you just kind of segued right into it, but you know, we've got a trend going with the precious metals. It, like you said, we've passed some very important indicators, some very important markers where gold and silver have tested, and they haven't tested in a really, really long time, gold especially. And I think it's revealing the truth about the U.S. debt crisis. In fact, I think it was the IMF just yesterday came out and made a couple of very interesting statements. They said Russia is now growing faster than all other advanced economies around the world. And they said, conversely, that the massive fiscal debt of the United States has stoked inflation and poses a threat to the worldwide economic structure, something along those lines. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but there's a lot going on. I mean, people are noticing precious metals are surging. We're seeing the BRICS nations just continually expand and consolidate their influence and power. De-dollarization is accelerating. You talked about a potential Red Sea moment, like we've heard that phrase for a very long time. Could be coming stemming from some sort of an obstruction in the Red Sea. So, you know, what have we not covered in terms of, you know, where this is headed? And now that we've crossed over these very important thresholds with precious metals, I mean, what does that really indicate to the listeners out there in terms of where we are in this, like you said, could be like up to a 7-year process of debt default? I mean, what can we expect to see in the near future? I know I packed a lot in there, but I guess I figure, you know, just kind of take it wherever you, you know,
I think
you want to go with it.
We've got at least a 2-year gold rally.
2 years. Okay, that's good news.
Oh, at least. Okay, let me make a couple of very basic observations.
Okay.
I'll get to your 7-point question.
That's I
okay.
Apologize.
It's okay. This is we're just
I only hit the people that I know can handle these questions, and you're one of the few. So
okay. Remember, it was back in December we heard about Operation Sandman.
Indeed. Yes.
Okay. And Operation Sandman basically had the threat. I'm going to make this really simple according to how I perceived it. 2 days, 20 countries selling $2 trillion in treasuries.
Yeah, something
like
that.
2 days, 20 countries, $2 trillion. And because of the Japan case study, Japan is now in a downward spiral for a financial crisis because they sold almost $200 billion worth of treasuries in a 1-year period. And I think the BRICS observed that. And, mm-hmm. and what they noticed was, oh, gee, we can't sell treasuries that fast.
Because it kills the currency. Yeah.
Because it kills the currency. But, you know, some of these countries don't, like Iran, they don't have a dollar-based currency. It's the Forex. It's the major Forex. It's the IMF special drawing rights nations. It's the United States. It's Japan, England, Europe, European Union. And a mysterious one in there is the Swiss. Okay, I'm going to say something controversial. I don't think the Swiss have a dollar-based currency. I think they have a narcotics-based currency.
I don't doubt that.
Okay.
And narcotics and other things as well, I would add to that list.
Yeah, they have a cuckoo clock basis. Yeah. Cuckoo clock cheese. They have a narcotics basis to the Swiss franc. Okay, I'm being silly. But because of the crisis that Japan got into, and quickly, they sold a lot of treasury bonds and they did not maintain the dollars in their dollar reserves that backed up their yen currency, and therefore the yen went down. Now, this is a paradox, and very few people get this. Alistair MacLeod gets this, and a few others might, but they're not really plain about this. If a foreign country in a major Forex nation, IMF nation, sells treasuries and does not keep that huge amount of funds, the proceeds, if they do not keep it in the dollar, their own currency goes down.
Right.
The dollar goes up when they sell treasuries. The dollar goes up. I've been saying this now for 7 years. The dollar will go up, up, and up some more during its rejection and then vanish in a supernova. And that's getting requoted. And I love to hear the requote because it means that people are paying attention, but they're not getting one of the typical dynamics. The Japanese sold treasuries and their yen went down, because they turned it into gold. All right. Now, here's my Operation Sandman revised forecast.
Okay.
20 countries, $2 trillion in 2 years. We okay. got a long, long bull market in gold. We got out of the 2,000 shackles. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to be looking at 2,500. There may be a pullback. I have a target. I said it was 2450, 2550 in a public article that Zero Hedge posted. By the way, my first article, Zero Hedge, and really happy about that.
Congratulations. I like Zero Hedge. Yeah.
And thanks to Gold Fix, which is an approved contributor, they ushered that article in. They're a very helpful guy. He just changed his title a little bit. I said, hey, fine, do whatever you wish. We said, we're not going to change your article. Okay, because of Operation Sandman revised 2 years, we're going to see nation after nation slowly bleeding the U.S. Treasury and forcing them to cover the with redemption, the dumped treasuries and the maturing debt treasuries. And this is a colossal sum totaling somewhere between 10 and 12 trillion this calendar year.
Wow.
That's 8 trillion in long dated maturities, treasuries, 2 trillion in short dated maturities that are they're coming to their end. They're maturing. And it and add to that all the dumped treasuries, like Norway saying, we don't want them anymore. Korea saying, we don't want them anymore. These are going to go down in value. We don't want to get holding the bag when these have a default. So they're smelling that default that I described as motivating the push over 2000. Let me make a quick comment. When we start playing around with 2500, you're going to wave bye-bye to 30 silver. We're going to go above it, cause short covering. And remember Fibonacci, it's such a small market. I think I'm going to get this right, Patrick, but I think a morning session in the stock market for Apple stock volume, just the morning volume in a single day is the same as silver for an entire year. Silver is a very small market. So once we get over 30, and I do not think the Swiss Basel crew are going to get in the way like they did in 2020. I don't want to get into that whole story, but they made available 200 million ounces and made sure we did not get above 30. That was in the GameStop and the Reddit networks. And Sprott wanted to do a Reddit network against silver, but he had his life threatened by, were they patriots or were they fascists? Okay, you know, we're really getting tired of the fascists. Now, back to your question about the multi-sides. I think there's three very big factors that need to be mentioned. And I'm going to go in reverse order to what I wrote them down. The first is we cannot find buyers of our debt. We cannot find buyers of the maturing debt. We cannot find buyers of the dump debt. We cannot find buyers of our current deficit, which gets securitized into treasury bonds. So we're going to have to monetize them. I believe we're going to have a little bit of work in the background from the Exchange Stabilization Fund, but let's leave that as a wild card that could happen, tapping the ESF. When you monetize debt, you introduce price inflation very quickly. It comes from the treasury bond market and works its way through the entire economy.
Now, when you say, let me just pause you really quick. When you say, just for the audience's sake, when you use the term, when they monetize the debt, what specifically do you mean by that? Are you talking about just increasing the supply of money, printing money, as they say, even though it may not be physical printing, but basically just dumping more into the system, right?
Print money, dump it into the system, but in an organized way to cover the treasuries that we cannot sell.
Okay. And this correlates, of course, with the failed bond auctions you're talking about.
Right. Well, that's because we can't find buyers. And because we can't find buyers, we need to avoid the death of the primary bond dealers that are bound by contract.
Okay.
To buy whatever is unsold at an auction. And we're very likely in the next year or so to see a death of a primary bond dealer bank. And I don't think it's going to be a major Wall Street. It's going to be a minor bank. I don't know which one it's going to be, but there are several of them. And they're all at risk, and they're all complaining that they're at risk and they need help from the Fed. In other words, we need the money from the Fed and the Department of Treasury authorizing it in order to buy the debt. And here's some of the technical terms. It's called unsterilized monetization. Because when they introduce new dollars into the system to cover that debt that we cannot sell, we're not draining the banking system of an equal amount. That's called sterilized. When you do unsterilized monetization of debt, you're printing money, you're not draining anything, you're increasing the money supply, and you're opening the door wide open for price inflation. And we're not only seeing price inflation from supply interruptions, supply problems, we're seeing it from sabotage, like diesel plants, diesel refineries, and we're seeing it from organized, what I call complicity between banks and insurance companies to raise insurance price, the prices, the cost of premiums for home fire insurance. Okay, this looks organized. This looks complicitous. It looks like they're working together. If you're a mortgage holder, you cannot get fire insurance, you lose your home, you lose your equity unless you can sell the home quickly, but you can't do that either because the banks don't want mortgages. Okay, we got a conspiracy with the banks and the mortgages and the insurance companies. This is very dangerous. It's very scary, but we've got the threat of monetized debt and its resultant. Okay, this is not like you wait a year or two. No. You wait 1, 2, or 3 months and you start to see more price inflation. Now, remember after the lockdown, we got a lot of price inflation in 2011. Okay,
yep.
That was not from excess money in the system. There was some interruption of the supply chain. Okay, mm-hmm. Point number one, monetization of the debt will bring about more price inflation. And that means foreigners feel uneasy holding our debt. And there are a lot of factors involved in their minds. The second thing is, since the Maidan 2014 U.S.-Israeli coup of Ukraine, they raised the U.S. and Israeli flags in Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
That's who did it. Ever since then, we've been weaponizing the dollar in a grand style. We've been weaponizing it for ever since 9/11, but we took it to a new level after 2014. We weaponized against the Russians. We froze their assets. And now this weaponization has taken on a new wrinkle. Foreigners do not want to hold treasuries if we confiscate Russian assets. You know, we talk tough. We act like, you know, it's our right because we declare the Russians to be guilty of war crimes when we're not covering the war crimes in Ukraine and underground in Ukraine, where they have baby factories, adrenochrome factories, bioweapon labs, you name it. The center of European trafficking and laboratory work is Ukraine, and it's never in the news.
Absolutely.
If you're a nation that wants to stop your NATO support, you're likely to get the dollar weaponization used against you, and they're selling treasuries. They did not enter. I did. I believe that if we're going to confiscate Russian assets, we're going to see them confiscate assets, and we're going to see the whole world dump treasuries. Okay, the third point, this is more technical. Pardon my voice. I'll continue to talk right through my worn-out voice. I don't care about my voice.
I'll pipe in any time, but I'm just letting you go. You're on a roll, so if you need a break, you just give me a signal.
I have noticed in the last 2 months that every gold, I'm focusing mostly on gold. Gold, I said this, gold with a battering ram will knock down the fortress doors, the gates, and silver will come flying in on horseback. So I'm watching the gold market. Ever since we broke above 2000, what was it, about November, December, we were playing with it and getting above it and going below it. What I've noticed is every pullback is brief, doesn't last for more than a few days, and lately doesn't last more than a few hours.
Yeah, absolutely.
A few have noticed that China and India are buying every sell-off. Mm-hmm. I believe China now has a strategy where they sense a greater hostility in a trade war with the United States. And China has decided we're going to convert all of our surplus. They've got a hefty surplus in trade. We don't. We got a $1 trillion deficit. We also got $2 trillion federal deficit. We got twin $1 trillion deficits. This is absolute dynamite to blow up the bond market. The Chinese are converting their trade surplus to gold. And they're waiting You idiots want to sell gold? You don't see what's coming? Fine, go ahead, you Western fools. Sell gold. Knock it down. And the Chinese pick it up. The Indians pick it up. The Indians are picking up the silver market, too. So you've got monetization of debt leading to inflation. You got weaponization of the dollars, which means that foreigners, even our friends, are selling the treasuries, U.S. government debt. And you got China and India and others. Okay, there is rumor of a multi-billionaire in Dubai. They're just rumors. And they're calling him a big buyer with no concern on price. Okay, so it's a billionaire. It could be, I'm just going to throw this out. It could be the UAE royals building their sovereign fund.
Could be, yeah.
That's I don't want to get into the UAE because they've got a history and they've done some pretty weird things, but the UAE is going to be the window where BRICS take their treasuries. And here's another angle. Maybe it's not so much a billionaire, but it's a group of billionaires in Dubai, UAE, United Arab Emirates. And what they're trying to do is to get a sufficient amount of gold so they have the inventory to supply gold to all the BRICS nations that are dumping treasuries. That's another very big possibility. And the point of this hidden hand in Dubai, that's what they're calling it, the hidden buyer, they don't care. If gold is up 30 or 40 bucks, they continue to buy. Okay. We're not seeing the typical dynamics of anything witnessed in the last 10 years. I think this is a gold breakout. It's going to last into 2026.
Wow.
2-year rally because of Operation Sandman revised to 2 years.
Well, you know, I'm curious. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say you were saying and the BRICS. I didn't know. I didn't want to cut you off halfway through the thought there.
BRICS are nowhere near halfway done dumping treasuries to buy gold for their gold trade. What do you call it? Gold token. I call it a gold trade note. Okay, this is my past lexicon. I call it the Eurasian trade zone from 2014 on. And that's BRICS. Okay. Yeah. They didn't go with the Eurasian trade zone. I gave it a designation that indicated Europe, like Russia, Eastern Europe, China, India, Eurasian trade zone. Okay, that's the core of the BRICS. I also talked about the gold trade note. The voice tipped me off on that back about 2012 or 13. And that looks like it's the gold token from the BRICS. I didn't know about the ledger for blockchain at the time, but notice a month ago, Russian leader, China leader, India leader, and one other leader, I think it was from Persia, they marched out and said, we're going to build out the BRICS blockchain platform. Okay, what's going to be on it? Okay, what they're saying is we're going to build an 8-lane interstate highway. And very few people are asking, well, what's going to be driven on your 8-lane highway?
Yeah, good question.
The digital ruble, the digital Chinese yuan, the digital Iranian rial, the digital Saudi, I think it's also called rial. I think the spelling is different. One has an I-Y, another one has no Y. It means royal. And it could be XRP, and it could be, they've never talked about a CBDC to be used on the blockchain in the BRICS. Okay, I think what they did was they mentioned everything but XRP because they don't want to get any more interference.
Mm-hmm.
We got a bunch of frivolous bullshit lawsuits that have no merit, no evidence, and every single lawsuit against Ripple and XRP has failed. It's not a security. You know, this is funny. It's not a security and it's not a currency. They don't know what the hell it is. What it is, in my opinion, is an on-demand device for enabling a transaction between two parties.
Exactly.
Maybe what it is, in a better description, in a very, what's the word, colloquial description, It's a digitized handshake.
I like that. Yeah, digitized handshake. All right, so
Okay.
let me ask you this, Jim. I mean, we're hearing a lot about, I mean, there's a couple of different ways I could go. I'm trying to decide here which way I want to go with this, but I am curious because I know you and I have talked about the underground wars quite a bit, and anybody who's been clued in on this topic has heard an awful lot about the White Hats recovering amounts of gold from underneath the ground that are just unfathomable. I mean, I've heard that the supply literally is almost endless, in essence, that gold, it's one of the biggest lies ever told, that that gold is not an abundant resource. I'm certain that you probably heard similar things, and we know that one way or another, we're going into some sort of a new system. You've been describing the new system as it's been coming out. You've been tracking the whole process and laying out for us. I mean, we don't exactly know what it's going to be called. We have all these different terms like the QFS, Nasara, Jisara, but we know that there's some difference, some major difference coming. And certainly we see the gold prices, the precious metals prices, like you talked about, trending in this direction, like you said, could be till 2026, a major bull market. But what about all of this gold? What is that, if it does in fact exist, if it's going into all of these different trusts, if it's perhaps, I don't know, maybe tied in some ways to what happened in Zimbabwe with their Zig currency that they just announced, and we heard that they, I think it's the Chinese, have guaranteed zero interest loans for Zimbabwe to get out of debt. So there's clearly something going on behind the scenes involving a vast amount of wealth. So my question is, when that wealth finally comes to the fore, however that is going to be, what's that going to do to the future price of gold and silver in your, well, let's just stay focused on gold. I guess silver is a different conversation, but.
There's some really imbecile conclusions that I want to dispel.
Okay.
Let me do a preface. Okay, aren't there 100 million or more television sets in the United States at least?
I would imagine so, yeah.
Why doesn't the price of televisions go way down? They're not for sale. Okay. We got hundreds of thousands of tons of gold, and it's going to be used to create a global monetary system. It's not going to drive the gold price down.
Okay.
It's not for sale. It's for usage. Aren't there maybe tens of millions of bricks? I mean, like clay bricks in the United States? Yeah. Well, why doesn't the price of bricks go down? Way down. Because they're building structures with them.
Gotcha.
Now we're going to have gold used to build out the BRICS digital architecture.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay,
All
the
right.
gold is in gigantic volumes. What I think might happen is we're going to see Trump say, bring an end to the Biden show, and I'll bring an end to the debt, and we can start fresh. And we can have some of the most unbelievable 4, 6, 8% GDP growth years that the United States has never seen since post-World War II, right at the time that the jackass was born. I was born in 52. And the late 40s and early 50s were some of the most magnificent growth years in United States history. Okay.
Yeah, after the war, yeah.
Trump has been like, just think of him as maybe the captain for gold trove recovery in the Pacific Rim gold wars. Now, I'm going to make a couple of weird comments. I have no bashfulness at all about being weird. We heard 3 months ago that Kissinger was dead. And I believe he died 2 years ago. So the cabal decided it's time that his name died. They killed his name. He didn't die. His name died. He's not mentioned in any negotiations. He's not mentioned in any like theories or planning of architecture for the global new structure. Architecture. And the same thing happened with Jacob Rothschild. He was announced as dying a month ago. And I believe he died 5 years ago. So what they did was they saw that his name died. So he's out of the picture. Okay, Patrick, what I'm going to say is kind of strange. We won. Now we need to build out the architecture for the victory parade, and the parade is essentially the new monetary system.
Okay. I'm liking where this is going.
And coming to the fore is like gold from the Saint Germain Trust. And that was mentioned as a $21 trillion check that went to a military redemption office, an official US military redemption office. And the MSM News doesn't mention that. So are we really left with 34 trillion minus 21? Do we really now have a $13 trillion debt? And is that being handled by some other huge gold trust? Because right now, roughly 10,000 tons is $1 trillion, roughly. And, you know, you can make your corrections, say, Jim, you're off. I know I'm off, but I'm not off by an order of magnitude. I'm not off by much.
Right.
Maybe it's like 11,000 tons. I don't care. But if I want to keep it simple, because I'm going to make an extrapolation. If 10,000 tons is a trillion, then 100,000 tons is 10 trillion. So if we got three times that, we need three times 100,000 tons. And there are a number of troves out there with that amount of tonnage. And I am getting not bombarded, but I'm getting peppered with three or four different well-informed people who have some photographs of the Philippines and their 1.3 million tons of gold.
Really? We actually touched upon that a little bit in our last show. I think it was Yamashita's gold we were talking about, right?
Yamashita's gold, and one guy wrote to me about a week ago, and he said, Jim, you mentioned that it's seven different mountain vaults on several different islands. The Philippines is called the Philippines because it's the Philippine Islands. It's an
Right.
archipelago. They've got dozens and dozens of decent-sized islands that have a gold vault on them. And some very wicked things occurred 50, 60 years ago, maybe more, like at the end of World War II. All the construction engineers were murdered after they made the vaults. So what is left is the maps. Okay, it's possible that we might get to a situation where the majority of the Philippines gold vaults have been discovered and put to use for the global system, and they know that there are a few more and they can't locate them. But you know, we've got such great technology that you could do low altitude aerial geophysical spectrometry. And if you got enough gold that's concentrated and refined and in a vault, it gives off a signal that's very powerful. So we might be able to locate them pretty easily. Anyway, there's a lady, they call her Mama Something, and I cannot think of her name, Mama Something, and she's the trustee for the Philippine Gold. I honestly don't have a lot of information about this, except that some men, clients and followers have said, Jim, there are a lot of zeros. It's in the quadrillions. So when you say, well, we got 34 trillion in debt, they say, well, don't worry about it. We got quadrillions. And that does not even address the Vatican gold, where the story was that there's a tunnel from Istanbul all the way to Jerusalem, and they got 100 miles of gold vault stacks that are 5 feet high and 5 feet wide. Now, that's when you where you got the quintillion estimate. You know, these are a lot of zeros, and I get a little confused when you get a lot of zeros, but I do my best to start with something like 10,000 tons, which is a little more than Fort Knox, and that's $1 trillion. Okay, you need to quantify. And by the way, Fort Knox is a pretty small vault.
Yeah, right.
Okay, the Germans have a vault that's a third the size of Fort Knox. Okay, fine. They're the biggest in Europe. They got 4,000 tons, 3,500 tons. And we never gave them back their tonnage in the New York Fed. What did we do? We started a war in Chad. We brought in a CIA army into Chad in the Northwest Africa, and we raided their gold mines, killed off a bunch of natives, paid off a bunch, and ended any kind of conflict, and just raided it, paid off little, you know, bribes to the officials in Chad, and redeemed, what was it? I think it was something like, I don't know exactly, 300 tons of gold for Germany, straight out of Chad. We stole it from North Africa. I mean, these are really thieves.
That's right.
It didn't do anything for the Chad people. I'm sure that there were 20 people in the Chad government that either got a bullet in the head or a lot of millions in their hands, probably Swiss accounts. As I said, they're backed by chocolate, cuckoo clocks, and narcotics. Oh, I left out cheese. Sorry. I don't mean salt.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a lot of respect for the Swiss economy that's legitimate. That's legitimate. Like, they got really good pharmaceutical companies. They got technology companies. They got cheese. They've got a lot of, it's not, it's, you know, you could say cuckoo clock, but it's also very fine, high level watches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. World class.
World class. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, go ahead.
I want to get back to the BRICS.
The BRICS, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
They are nowhere near done. What I like about the BRICS right now, this is going to sound a little, there are a number of paradoxes. I've already pointed out a few. Here's another paradox. I think some of the strengths of the BRICS union is their bickering and their disunity. Does that not foment decentralized?
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two big players in BRICS say to China, we don't like your policy on this. And this is the social credit banking system. That was very evident in August last year in Durban, South Africa, where they kind of arrested President Xi and his entourage of security and said, you're not going to make your speech. We're going to take you over to a different location in a hotel, and we're going to keep you there. They were in confinement. So they did not have Xi as a speechmaker at the BRICS talking about social media, social credit scoring that he wanted to advocate for all the BRICS. You've got disunity in the BRICS, and it's making the BRICS stronger.
That's a point well taken, yeah.
You got India. They said, we don't want the gold token. India. And they're not saying they want something else. They're saying, we're all for anything that's de-dollarized. India is adding strength to the de-dollarization factor that holds together the BRICS. They don't want the gold token. They want rupee payment for Russian oil, and that's not working. So they might go back to the UAE Durban, Dirham, D-I-R-H-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
And the dirham is actually pegged to the dollar. We're going to see the dollar used as an accounting unit. And that's going to be another feature of the BRICS. They're going to have commodity trading, dollar accounting unit, just to keep everything consistent and organized. And they're not going to use the dollar for trade payment. India wants anything besides the dollar for trade payment. And they've got deals to supply diesel and gasoline to Western Europe. And France just signed a Russian gas deal. France. Okay. We're seeing the beginning of the breakup of the Russian sanctions. The BRICS are an interesting crew. They're so interesting that I'm calling it the precursor to the global trade union that knocks down trade barriers. And the U.S. better be careful, because the Five Eyes nations might be embargoed. England, United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. The Five Eyes. What do they have in common? Support for the attacks on Gaza. This is going to be manifested in trade embargo if they're not careful. Right now, the embargo is for the Suez Canal. And you know, there's so much more. I think that many of the foreign nations that include some of the BRICS are getting trade payment credits from crude oil coming from the United States.
Yeah, I remember we mentioned that. Yeah.
And you know, not too many analysts are talking about that. If they don't want the Treasury bill, they might take crude oil. It's a
Yeah.
hard asset. You know, some people don't get a little confused. A hard asset does not have to be a metal. A hard asset has to be tangible.
Tangible.
You
Yep.
know, I made a joke when I started the newsletter in 2004. I said the United States has one third of the global coal supply. Why don't we go on a coal standard? I'll tell you why. Because we're a deficit nation and we'd lose all our coal. We'd rather go on a bullshit standard, a standard of lies. And we're being called on it, and it's going to end up with a treasury default. I'm going to repeat my forecast. This summer and probably late summer, we're going to have talk and debate of a debt default.
And is that what you refer to as like, because you were talking about how just this paradox where these countries, all these foreign nations, they dump their treasuries, they buy gold, they watch their own currency devalue in the process, like Japan being the glaring example. That was what kept Project Sandman in its original form, let's just say, up on the shelf. They decided maybe that wasn't such a great idea. But you said it at a certain point that so the dollar rises, 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 and then vanishes. And so my question is, what's the vanishing point? What's that look like? What's is that the conversation that you're talking about right now in the midsummer about this debate of a treasury default? Is that are we talking about the same thing here? What is that vanishing point? Where is the moment where the
The vanishing point is when the BRICS gold token has some critical mass. And right now they haven't even launched it. What they're settling right now is a cornucopia. They're doing digital ruble, they're doing digital yuan. We're soon going to see a digital Persian rial. We might soon see a digital Saudi rial, gold backed. And then later, hey, let's make something more common. We're going to do like trade between Saudi and let's just make up something, Saudi and Brazil. They might go with the Saudi gold real digital form on the blockchain. Okay, I don't know. I'm just making an example. There's a lot of trade between Saudi and Brazil. Could be Argentina, a South American giant. Brazil is much bigger than Argentina. It's actually about eight times larger. Brazil is very large.
A lot going on in Brazil too. We don't
Pardon
have
me?
to get into it, but there's a lot going on in Brazil.
Yeah, I don't want to open up a whole new room, but they got 200 million people and they got tremendous soccer football.
Yeah, indeed. All right. So yeah, so when the gold tokens that you're talking about, when they hit a critical mass, you're saying that's really going to be the vanishing point for the dollar.
You're going to have such great momentum. By then, they might be over half done by selling about selling foreign treasury bonds, foreign held treasury bonds. But keep in mind, like a monarchy nation, like you know Qatar, if they sell treasuries and buy more gold, I don't think that hurts their currency. I don't think they've got a dollar basis. They're not an IMF dollar basis currency. The
Gotcha.
major
All right.
forexes are unique. The major forex currencies are all dollar basis. They're all dollars with a different jacket on. Okay, this is very weird stuff. When we created the dollar currency and the forexes that are extensions, we did something bizarre. They're all dollars. They're all dollars. It just got a different coat on. It's very hard to wrap your head around. But let me give you another example. A French firm, I've mentioned this example before, they're called Amundi. Amundi is the French BlackRock. They're a
Okay.
private equity firm. They're a very giant firm. They've got about $3 trillion in assets.
Okay.
They announced close to a year ago they were going to divest all dollar assets. Now, that is not a central bank, Patrick. They're going to dump their dollars and they're going to buy, who knows, euro bonds. Maybe they'll buy up, you know, distressed euro economy factories
Now, is
that they
that
know
part of
are.
the European Central Bank war with the West, with the U.S. Central Bank? Remember, we were talking about that several months back.
Yeah,
That decision,
that's
because
more
that's
like a
the
buy.
BlackRock of Europe. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, there are a few of them, but they don't have anything like BlackRock. BlackRock is fed by narco money.
Right. I know. I'm just in terms of size, power, money, influence, and is what I
Yeah,
mean.
well, the Mundi is like 3 or 4 times smaller than BlackRock, but it's enough to make a dent if they get rid of stocks. Okay, here's something very wrap your head around and keep in mind. Foreigners own $7 trillion of treasury bonds. But if you add together treasury bonds, corporate bonds, and stocks, it's 34 trillion. It's the same as our debt.
Yeah, same number. Yeah.
Big, big numbers. And if they say, well, we're going to get out of the US stock market because there might be a crash that's triggered by the bond default. A bond default has cataclysmic impact and consequences. And the biggest is it'll kill a lot of financial markets in the United States. We've already got a corporate bond market that's dead. We've already got a mortgage bond market that's dead. What you've got, the last guy standing in the bond market is treasuries, and they ain't looking very good
No,
lately.
no. I think the last time we spoke, you said they were on the hook, low maturity yields this year alone, like 7.5 trillion, 8 trillion, something along those lines.
8 trillion for long dated maturities
A
that
long
are
dated.
long dated. 8 for long dated, 2 trillion for short dated.
Okay, wow.
And they're maturing this year. And this is something we cannot handle without the ESF
Right.
coming to the rescue. And I don't want to talk about the ESF. That's
Can
a
I ask
topic.
you? Can I ask you?
It's
Oh,
a
sorry.
topic my colleague Rob Kirby murdered.
Right, I know. We don't really touch the ESF. We kind of mention it and then we step away from it, which I totally understand. We are hearing a lot about, at least from the mainstream media, and I'm curious to hear your take on this because there is indeed a conversation to be had, but we're hearing a lot about the commercial real estate factor. In terms of causing a major economic downturn, is there anything that you want to say on that front? Because certainly the commercial sector has been savagely hit. We're seeing that happen all over the globe. Are you seeing that as sort of a byproduct of the underlying issue, or is there something substantive there that we have that folks should understand about that aspect of the equation?
I think the corporate real estate market is sufficient to bring down the US banks. Well, we're likely to see, we haven't talked about US banks. Here we are, an hour and 10 into it. We have not mentioned US banks. They're caught in the middle. They're caught in the middle of the government debt default that's threatening. And then on the other side, they're caught with bond decline in value. They got unrealized losses in their portfolio. Isn't it interesting? Every time you hear about the unrealized US big bank portfolio losses, they never say it's primarily treasuries. But when you get analysts talking about it, they say, well, they're treasuries that were bought way back with the 2% and the 2.5%. Those are down 40%. Okay, so you do get an analysts or chiming in and giving, good interpretations. But the commercial real estate is in such a bad condition that we might see, let's just say region by region, BlackRock and Vanguard coming in to buy up distressed commercial real estate. And at the same time, they're buying up residential mortgages. And there are a lot of rumors that BlackRock was in bankruptcy, but they're still operating. If you can explain that, you're a better man than I. Think what it means is that they're in restructure,
Yeah.
but we're never told what their structure is.
Yeah, they're being
And
restructured behind the scenes, I think.
I think the BlackRock restructuring is they're trying to figure out different sources of narcotics funding that they can bring to the fore. I think they're going to use narcotics funding to buy residential real estate across the United States with complicity from the insurance companies. I have had about a dozen clients tell me that their home utilities, like electric, gas, cable, and internet and insurance, when you add insurance, their home costs are more than double. And their insurance is the biggest increase of all. One guy in California said, I used to pay 2,500, now it's 7,000.
Wow.
You had State Farm Insurance announced they're no longer going to do fire and hazard insurance in the entire state of California. Is that to bring about more foreclosures and losses for the homeowners so that BlackRock can come in there and buy it for whatever is on the debt? Okay, if you've got a $250,000 property and half of that is debt and half of that is your equity, then you lose your 125 in equity. And whoever wishes to put up the 125 can buy from the bank. And that's, I think, going to be BlackRock. BlackRock, I featured this in the March report. They're doing build to rent communities now. They might have a complex where they make 30 little houses or 30 pairs of houses. So they're 60. So left, right, left side, right side, not exactly a condominium, but a cooperative where there's a big house that's divided down the middle. Lots of inventive designs, but they're not intending to buy, not trying to find buyers. They're building to rent. And what we might see if we don't, if we lose control of this, is we might see BlackRock and a few of their friends owning a significant portion, like 10, 20% of residential in the United States. And they can dictate the rent. And then they can do really strange things like order iron grates on the windows and then dictate the terms. Not of key, but of key cards.
Well, that's the direction they want to go. Question is, are they going to get there?
Prisons. Okay, that is a threat. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that is a threat. We better get a handle of BlackRock and Vanguard because they dominate. Vanguard dominates in the 401k sector. Okay, when I was in my last job, it was a Pennsylvania-based consulting firm. I went to the office where they handled the 401k, and I said, "What do you got for offerings there?" And they said, "Well, we have an S&P fund, we have Vanguard, and we've got a bond fund." I said, "Anything else?" And they said, "Well, just variations on those three." And I said, "Well, what if I want to have something like a gold mining stock?" "Oh, we don't offer that. If you want stock, it has to be S&P or Vanguard." Okay, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Vanguard is everywhere in the 401k selections. So if you're wondering who issued the health mandates, it was BlackRock and Vanguard. I did some research. It wasn't hard. I basically read articles that came my way. Vanguard doesn't own more than about 7% of any company, but they're the biggest shareholder. And what you get is the individual shareholders, let's just say company X, like say General Electric or something like that. Vanguard owns, let's just say it's 5%. Well, what about all the different groups that own a quarter of a percent? Well, if they would just organize and come up with a single representative that owns 15% of General Electric, then they could say to Vanguard, "Go shit in your hand." But they're not organized. So Vanguard makes the rules. They're the biggest shareholder. And
Interesting.
it's not fair, it's not right, but it's the reality. Most of the shareholders for companies like General Electric are not organized. They don't make a voting bloc. That's what it's called. Okay.
That could be part of the Great Awakening as well.
The big banks, I believe, are going to work toward a situation where they're going to buy up a lot of gold. We're trying to solve the question now, the riddle. Who's buying the gold in the United States? Who's buying it? I think it's the banks, and I think it's also the Fed. The big banks are buying gold. I do not believe that the U.S. Mint reduce their output. I don't believe it for a second. Why would they do that? They're under law to meet demand. Well, what if they lie to us and say there's not enough supply, so we're cutting back to 50% on the gold eagles and the same for silver eagles? What if the other 50% is the Wall Street banks? Then they're meeting demand. So the operators of the U.S. government, namely the big banks, do not prosecute the U.S. Mint for violating the charter because they are meeting demand. It's just 50% of the demand is not made public, and it's the big banks. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The big banks might see that if they gather together a tremendous amount of gold reserves and in their secondary books, that if we go up to 5,000 gold, they're going to relieve a lot of their pressure. And I've got to mention the Zylstra formula. The guy, it was a Dutch banker. It was the mid-1990s. He had finished his term as the Basel BIS, Banker International Settlement. He was the chairman, and he was interviewed after his time as chairman. And he was interviewed, and he said, well, first he had a quote, if the United States has a problem with $240 million in a gold request, then your problem is much bigger than that transaction. That's from Zylstra, Zijlstra, Zylstra, Dutch. And what he said was, there's going to come a time, it could be a couple of decades from now. He said this in the mid-1990s. There could come a time when the main central banks, he's referring to the Rothschild franchise, the main central banks are going to find themselves in a very difficult, insolvent situation. And the only way out for them would be to quietly acquire a tremendous amount of gold and then send it to 3,000, 5,000, then 10,000, and that will relieve their entire insolvency. Mm. I'm here to tell you that I believe that it has begun.
Wow. Okay.
I don't have any proof. I don't have any proof at all.
Like, okay.
But you know what's funny? I'm not talking out my ass.
I don't think you are. No, I didn't say that. No, we're just having a laugh there. That's okay.
What we're seeing is the central banks are showing a big increase in their official central bank gold holdings. What they're not showing you is their unofficial central bank holdings, because these central banks are privately held and they don't owe you jack shit for information about what they're doing off their books. Off their books are private books. You got a private corporation, then you can show your books to your shareholders. And who is the Fed shareholders but Wall Street banks? And JP Morgan is 35% shareholder. They no longer have these Swiss trillionaires like Warburg and whoever, Rothschild. They don't own the Fed no more. Mm-hmm. I use a double negative for the effect that it sounds kind of cool. They don't own no more. They're out. And Wall Street owns it, which means Wall Street governs policy.
Mm-hmm.
And JP Morgan has the biggest vote. And I believe they're building up their gold reserves. And I think that once, let me get back to the gold price stuff, that topic. Once we get over 2,500 gold, we're going to see silver launch above 30 and move toward 50. Probably within, it probably could be anywhere between 2 and 4 or 5 weeks.
Mm. Well, that's exciting. 2,500 is a key marker then.
to $50 right, we'll silver. Remember Fibonacci, 10, 20, 30, 50, 80. I kid people. I say, if we got 10, 20, 30, 50, 80, what's after that? Don't think too hard.
Oh, you're riddling me?
130.
Okay. Now, math is my strong suit. That's why I have you on.
10, 20, 30, 50, 80. 50 and 80 is 130. Okay. Okay. This is going to be lightning. Quick.
That's exciting. Wow.
Now, let me finish. Once we get to 2,500 gold, we're going to see the move, I believe. I'm just speculating, okay? I'm just talking as though I've had a couple of rum and cokes. We're going to have a distraction with silver going to 50. And then I think the central banks are going to step in and say, look, we're all long. We're in. Let's make it 3,000 next week. Okay, that's where you get what they call the discontinuous movement. We got over 3,000. Oh my gosh, this is tremendous. Here we are, we're getting into the election. It looks like we might have a debt default. This is really getting weird. Donald Trump is going to win. Donald Trump did win. Donald Trump is talking about debt default. Donald Trump is talking about resolution. My gosh, there's a gigantic movement. We're up to 3,070, and we're dicking around between 2,950 and 3,070. And my gosh, what's going on? The next thing you know, whoop, we got a decision to make it 5,000 to bring about more stability. It ain't going to be for stability. It'll be to rescue the banks who have built up their long, big, big reserves. Now, there is something about
That's an
equilibrium.
interesting play.
There is something about equilibrium. And let me give you a preface. I have been curious. I call them the Andes silver mine nations, the Andean silver nations. It's Mexico. They're at the northern end of that. And the San Andreas Fault is part of the Andes fault line. But Ecuador, Peru, Chile, even Bolivia to some extent, but they don't have so much the precious metals. These nations shut down some of their mines. And it's now going to become funny because they didn't want the COVID risk for their workers. This is. When they use the bullshit to back out of a suppressed market, I call that clever. And I have had a question. My question has been for the last couple of months, how long does it take for them in the Andes region to reopen silver mines? The answer was 18 months minimum. They got to get the permit, they got to get all the different water rights, they have to make sure the electricity is good, they have to make sure that there is a plan to deal with the nearby villages in case of contamination. It's a messy industry, mining. Okay. So if we get up to 3,000 by the end of this year, and I think we're going to be looking at 2,500 this summer. Okay. Look how quickly we got to 23 something. The
Yeah,
20,
we're not far off.
not even 10% away.
Yeah.
And the percentages are going to be mind-boggling for silver. From 28 to 50 is almost double, almost. It's almost 100%. But what I think is going to happen is that we get past like the end of the year, toward the end of the year, we get to the 3,000 territory and we realize, oh my gosh, we got a lot of demand and every sell-off is finding new buyers. And we've got a severe supply shortage. That's when the silver industrial deficit becomes a major topic. And I
Okay.
don't think India is going to help out anymore. India has been relieving the industrial deficit for a decade or two.
Yeah.
We're going to have a long time to reopen these mines in the Andes. And something has been happening in Mexico. It is stranger than strange. They're saying now that they want to limit foreign investment, and it's got to go through an approval process, and it's going to be more bureaucracy, and you got over a 50% decline in foreign investment in Mexican mining. Furthermore, they want to add a 10% royalty to all Mexican mining, and they're seeing a severe impact to silver. The silver output is down. I don't have hard figures, but it's down. We have silver companies that are saying we're not even going to release our output. What they're doing is they're making output and they're putting it in inventory. They're doing a lot of different tricks, not participating. And this is, AML, AMLO, the president, Obrador. This is really confusing, and it's an obstruction for the silver output. And if you're Mexico and you see that you got an unfair price under 30, you might actually try to devise obstructionary laws, obstructive laws. I don't know what the right adjective is. So they come up with a law that they're going to just abolish later. You know, when you get rid of your price suppression, we'll get rid of our dumbass law. Okay, they're in charge of Mexico. Okay, this is turning into a global metal war. And the metal war is linked to the dollar treasury bond war.
Indeed.
Okay,
Absolutely.
I find it exciting. We're going to see a lot of people invest more. I've heard in the last few months that the dealers in the United States are net buyers from the people. The people are selling their gold and silver because they can't make household budgets. They can't meet their budget costs. And this is very unfortunate because they're not going to be able to participate as much as they wanted. I had a client yesterday say, "Jim, I like to see the gold rally. It's all good, but damn, I had to sell a lot of my gold in the last few years. I got some, but I don't have anything like what I had." And I just try to encourage him to hang on, try to buy more. He said, "I can't buy any more."
Yeah.
And their insurance costs are going up.
Yeah.
And you know, when you get fires like Maui that have a lot of suspicious origins, it just adds to the insurance costs. What do you think? How do you think fire insurance costs in northern Texas are right now?
I can't even begin to speculate on that, but I'm guessing it's astronomical. It's got to be.
It's got to be higher, and it's
Yeah.
hurting a lot of people.
It is. People are suffering. Indeed.
I am excited by a lot of what's happening, and I just want to mention in closing a few different points that I've not mentioned so far.
Yeah, please.
We have a transition of geopolitical and financial power. It's shifting from west to east, and it's going to be manifested in removing the dollar and integrating gold in banking systems and trade payments, both. Whenever you see an end to a paper monetary standard, you must go to a metal. You don't go to a different paper. Okay, we have now also, these are my 20 points. And I'm on number 14 here. I'll move quickly. We now have a distrust internationally of all things American.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about banks, financial markets, economic statistics, warfare, news networks, social nonsense like gay and social governance, gay lesbian nonsense. My gosh, the percentages of gay lesbians is so small, and they make it sound like it's 20% of the population. It's not even two. Okay, and that's not all. It's political fascism in addition. Okay, I mentioned number 15, the mothballed mining project. They're going to take a long time to come online to meet some of this demand. We're not going to have a lot of demand come out of the work woodwork. We've been in deficit for too long. Okay, the global debt, let's just not focus on the United States. The global debt in relation to GDP is now 330%. We're going to see a global debt default. We might see a Euro debt default, Euro Union. We might see a British gilt debt default. All these major nations might be going to gold and dumping their own local sovereign debt. Number 17, I hit this before. The de-dollarization movement is going to eventually culminate in the gold token. But I believe that several nations are working feverishly right now to build their gold reserves to make that possible. XRP, it's gold backed, it's on-demand liquidity. Doesn't matter how much XRP you need, you can fill the need with on-demand liquidity. It'll happen on the fly. Oh boy, that's exciting. The
It sure is.
specter of war. We've talked about war, but we didn't say war is feeding the gold market. It is. In fact, you see three major reasons in the U.S. press. They say the credit crisis is building, the price inflation that's emerging, and the specter of war. My last point is controversial, but I make it with confidence. I maintain that dark money is part of the hidden hand finding gold. And I bring up a couple of examples. Langley, namely, you know, the cocaine importing agency, CIA. Langley has several, I'm told at least a couple dozen containers in the major Greek ports like Piraeus. And they're loaded with shrink-wrapped $100 bills, and each container is worth something on the order of $10 billion.
Wow.
Okay, these are very large stores of cash. Do you really think that Langley is going to leave that all alone during a debt default?
Nope.
They're going to look for a hard asset. That's just some of the dark money.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly money laundering, but okay, remember the Chapi controversy about 7 or 8 years ago in Mexico, and a lot, it was billions in cash and gold coins found in Mexico. It was from rival drug cartels. The cartel in power did not have control of Chapi, and they nailed him. A lot of the cash like that is going to go into gold coins, much more than silver coins. Oh, my goodness.
Now, a lot of that's happening in South America right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Big time.
And never leave out the traffickers. And I don't like talking about child trafficking much. It's what opened the door for a lot of very serious dark force attacks for me. But the traffickers and their money laundering, let's keep it very general. White women, kids, human organs, bioweapons, adrenochrome. Okay, these are traffickers, and their headquarters is Ukraine. They're going to be converting much of their dollars into gold, but they're also going to use Bitcoin. I regard Bitcoin as having 50% legitimate users and 50% traffickers.
Mm.
The legitimate users, I got schooled about 3 years ago from a guy, oh gosh, I don't remember what I called him. I think it was JV Blue. I called him JV Blue or something. He's a Pacific Rim fund manager. I don't want to describe him any further than that. But he schooled me in a very constructive way. He helped me to understand the Bitcoin usage. And he said, imagine you're a fund in Thailand or a fund in Korea or a fund in Australia, and you want to move $1 billion to a company or a bank in Italy. If you use the above, we call it above ground. If you use the above ground SWIFT, then you've got the American eyes, and they always look for a ferryman toll, and then there's scrutiny on what's the nature of the funds. Is it all legitimate?
Right. And
they avoid all that by going with Bitcoin.
Of course.
All legitimate. It's all legitimate. Legitimate. A lot of uses of Bitcoin is legitimate.
I agree.
The Chinese use it for trafficking purposes and payments.
It's interesting that it's being embraced in El Salvador by the president. You have any thoughts on that?
Not many.
Not many. Okay, well, let's put an end cap on it. It's been a long conversation. I know we probably want to wind it down anyway, but yeah, I think Bitcoin, I agree with you. I don't think it's just like anything else. I mean, it's a tool, but it's also, you know, who's wielding the tool. And in so many cases, we've heard, you know, that's really been the...
It's not backed by much, but it's so commonly used. And I had a friend who bought it in 2009 at $100, and he sold it at $300 and boasted that he tripled his money.
He's probably kicking himself now, huh? I can imagine. I can imagine. I remember hearing about it back in 2008 when it was like a cent, or it was like a fraction of I mean, it was crazy how much you could have gotten back in those days,
They're
but who
not
knew?
going to be able to control this. There's a lot of threat that Bitcoin is going to be targeted by, the architects of the reset, and I believe they're going to have
I think it's going away.
so much trouble that they're going to have trouble. They're going to wish they had five hands to manage their own bank collapse and debt default, and the outlet is going to be gold and Bitcoin, and never leave out Ethereum. Ethereum's got a lock on a lot of different contracts, but hey, look, it's been fun,
It has.
and we've been at it for 1 hour 40, I think.
Yeah, I think it's about that time. So tell folks before we break a little bit about your website, about the Hat Trick newsletter. Just give everybody a rundown, a quick reminder. There are a lot of new listeners, but give folks a reminder where they can get more Jim Willie. And then we'll have you back on hopefully next month.
Okay, it's golden-jackass.com. This is my 20th anniversary. I'm very excited that I've made it this long. I didn't think it was going to last this long, but I'm going to be doing my dead level best, and with the help of a lot of supporters, I'm able to continue with aid. And they're predominantly Christians, and I thank the Lord Jesus, and I'm not bashful at all. I have numerous examples of a very urgent need and then a very sudden hand with aid. And they mentioned that they're Christians and they want to support my work because I've stuck my neck out and I identified evil. And I'm talking about organized evil. But it's a golden-jackass.com. The flagship is the newsletter. It's the only one. It's called the Hat Trick Letter, but the name's irrelevant. It's the newsletter on the golden-jackass. I've got time. This morning I did a consult call. A couple of days ago I did another. I'm doing two or three a week. They're interesting. And they offer me, this is a very unusual comment to make. I'm available for consult calls to help out people who have unresolved problems and a lot of confusion on some of the events and factors involved. But I also benefit, like one in 10 consults provides me some information that's very valuable, like at Long Beach for the underground battles and re rejection of treasury bills. And like 2 years ago now, the FDIC officer who told me that every Wall Street bank was in bankruptcy, but as long as they get sufficient liquidity, they will not have a failure. Unbelievable information I get from the consult. So subscribe to the newsletter. Maybe get a consult, hit the aid button, which is no longer with PayPal. I got rid of them. Hit the donate button. And if you're wealthy and you want to support my work like a mission, hit the sponsor button. Someone did just a few days ago. Honestly, I have my own personal private reaction to that. And it's not to cry in my wrist. It's to show reverence to the Lord, because this is as much a global battle for liberty as it is a spiritual battle. These fascists are Satanists, and they're trying, it's a Satanist cult, and they're trying to get a godless nation with no home ownership, broad poverty, and they don't want you to own gold. They don't want you to have money enough to buy gold. They want to make smart cities. I just did a consult call a few days ago. There are now four smart cities in the making in Michigan. Not getting any publicity.
That's right. And it ties into the conversation we had about BlackRock and, just how far this is going to go before, we see some pretty tangible, we use the word tangible. That's a pretty good word for 2024. A lot of folks out there want to see something tangible happen really soon.
In Flint, the smart city might include a lot of unvetted migrants. It's
Oh,
getting so
you bet on
bad
that.
in our education system that there was a suspension of a student who mentioned the term, who used the term illegal immigrant. He got suspended. Okay, this is a sickening situation for our education. We're building a new generation of liberal retards and people who, I asked my sister, okay, this is the last thing I'll say, then I'll say goodbye. I asked my sister, "Hey sis, what's your favorite pronoun?" And she said, "Bitch."
Oh, that's a
I
great
said,
way to end it.
"I'm a jackass," and hers is "Bitch." And she's
I
an
love it.
attorney, so and attorneys have to be, you know, aggressive, forceful, assertive, and confident. And she's done very well in her career. That's over 30 years. And
Awesome.
she's been my ally, and I'm very grateful to her in the last few years. We lost our father, and that's tough. But my father called me unpatriotic, and I'm the most patriotic member of our family, including all of our 30 cousins. So, you know, Dad, you missed that one. And I got a punitive inheritance for my lack of patriotism. All right.
Hopefully we can get enough people to get a consult going and enough people to sign up for the hat trick letter, and we can reverse that punitive measure he took. That's really unfortunate. But
and to the bizarre events. And some people who do a consult call ask me about what is going on in your life. What is it? So I explain all kinds of real, ugly, weird, rare events that I call three sigmas that are very costly. Thanks for having me on. It's been great. And you're looking good. Like that beard. Looking good.
Oh, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. You're looking good as well. Well, thank you everybody out there for listening. This was a great conversation, a classic Jim Willie. I hope you guys really enjoy it. Like I said, I love having Jim back on the show. Hopefully we'll have him back for you next month. And I'll be back soon with another report. But until then, God bless and Godspeed everyone. Patriot out.